Russian spacecraft is heading for the International Space Station. It was launched today from Kazakhstan. The launch had been planned for Thursday, but was aborted seconds before takeoff because of a problem with a chemical power source. It's carrying three crew members, one each from Russia, Belarus, and the U.S., and is expected to dock with the space station on Monday. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jones Day, an integrated partnership collaboratively providing legal services for more than a century. 42 offices, 5 continents, serving clients as one firm worldwide. Learn more at jonesday.com.
It's a brisk morning here on the Augustana College campus. You're just in time for a conversation with this week's guest, Jack Cullen from the Rock Island Downtown Alliance. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll join us here on Quad Cities Public Radio as we while away the hour, check in on the composer's datebook, and who knows what else. It's all ahead on Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded. Well, I keep waiting for spring to make up its mind, get here and stay, but right now 35 degrees under mostly clear skies in the Quad Cities. It's going to cloud up a little bit, but not get too much warmer. Who cares? We're cozy right next to our radios, and we're joined by Jack Cullen of the Rock Island Downtown Alliance. Jack, thanks for being here today.
Kai, thanks for the invite. This is a...
You know what I did, Jack? I completely forgot one little thing. Can you swing that arm right over to you so it's in front of your face there? There you go.
Mic'd up.
Yeah, there we go. We want to make sure we can hear all the wonderful things you're going to say. So this, I was just telling Jack, I've been a little bit under the weather this week, and my mind is just in a fog. You know, radio, one thing that helps, a microphone. That's helpful. Thank you, Jack.
My bad, too.
No. This is all on me. But I'm so grateful that you're here. I think it's kind of funny because I just dawned on me that I'm in a spousal series, right? Because some time ago, I had the great good fortune of having your spouse, Maria Oliveris, on, and now I get to talk with you. Last week's guest was a fellow named Adam Call, and a few months earlier, I had his amazing spouse, Rebecca Rice, on. So I got to figure out who's going to be the next spousal guest we'll have here. But I'm grateful that you are here. You have had such an extraordinary career already in this community, and you're so doggone young, but it's great to watch all the things that you're doing. We're going to cover it all, Jack. I'm just grateful that you were able to take time from your beautiful family to be with us this morning.
Thanks, Kai. Great opportunity and appreciate the invite.
All right. Well, let's spool it back here a little bit. You did not grow up around here. So tell us a little bit about where you got your start.
No, yes. And I just wrote it down yesterday, getting my year-long visitor pass at the Arsenal. But I was born in Boston, Massachusetts. My folks moved when I was just a month old to Madison, Wisconsin. But I've got the roots in Charlestown. But yes, grew up my childhood through high school in Madtown and found the Quad Cities through Augustana. So that was my introduction to this community.
What caught your eye about that college, this community? What got you down here?
So I wanted to, one of my priorities or my goals in college was finding a smaller school, and I wanted to play tennis in college, and wanted to compete at the Division III, NCAA Division III level, and had never heard of the Quad Cities, and had heard about Augustana actually from a coach at a different school. It's kind of a family friend, and through conversation, we were talking about other programs and good schools and up and coming programs, and he tipped us off to Augustana, and so my dad and I made the connection, and eventually drove down here and first introduction to downtown Rock Island, stayed at the Holiday Inn, visited the campus, fell in love with it, really enjoyed the team, and the rest is history.
Well, you made that distinction about the Division III athletics, and I hear that a lot from people. You know, a lot of people get into college, and they know they're not going to be a professional in their the athletics of their choosing, right? Whether it's water polo, football, it doesn't matter. And so they know that their college experience needs to be more than sport X. What were some of the other things you were looking for when you were thinking about going off to college?
So I went to private school growing up. And so the smaller school setting was something that I was interested in pursuing. And so, you know, Augustana is a liberal arts college, you know, fit that bill. About 2,500 students or so at the time, and staying somewhat close to home, about 2.5 hours from Madison. And but you know, a lot of different programs. There were I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was entering college. I knew that I wanted to play tennis, and I knew that I wanted to be exposed to a variety of different parts of the college to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. And I had that experience at Augustana.
So part of that I know was journalism, right?
Yes.
So how did you get into that? Did that start earlier than college? How did that come about?
So, and prior to that, I actually had a short stint in the speech language pathology program at Augustana, which is, Augie's very well known for that program. And so that was something that I did try, did not stick with that. But again, liberal arts education allowed me the opportunity to kind of test out different pieces, but I had always loved to write and storytell and communicate with people, and that was something I knew going into college. But yeah, going back to second grade, teacher that gave us a writing assignment, I remember writing in a notebook on the stairs of my house for just hours, coming up with, you know, creative stories, and so I knew that. But was inspired by a professor at Augustana who sadly passed away last year, Dr. Jim Dyer, who was my advisor and a mentor of mine during my time at Augustana. And he really piqued that interest. Took a news media course with him and news literacy. And I said, hey, this is fun. I enjoy this and let's explore it. And became a journalism major.
And then did you pursue that after graduation?
I did, yeah. When I was at Augustana, I had a great internship with the Moline Dispatch, Rock Island Argus, after my junior year. And that was really my first taste in a professional newsroom. And wrote for the Augustana Observer during my time at Augie. And after graduating, I had an internship with my hometown newspaper, the Wisconsin State Journal in Madison. And so that's a Lee Enterprise paper. And after that internship, I had an opportunity to get back to the Quad Cities for a full-time gig at the Quad City Times.
And you were coaching tennis for a while too, weren't you?
I was, yeah. Connected through Augustana as an assistant coach. Actually, so yeah, I was hired by the Times in December of 2013. And after I graduated in the spring of 2013, rerouted back to the Quad Cities, started coaching tennis too at Augie for both the men and women's team. Really until 2021. So that was always a side gig, but a great way to stay connected to the college and feed that competitive spirit and help with the development of the, you know, the young men and women on the tennis teams.
That seems like, you know, I have to confess, never really got into it. There's many things I didn't get into athletically, of course, but tennis seems like that would have been a smart choice because people play it well into their later decades, right? And I assume you're still playing.
Similar to golf, yeah, it can be a lifelong sport.
Yeah.
Although pickleball is kind of dominating the racket sport world or paddle sport world right now. But tennis is that lifelong sport, and it's a great mental and physical activity.
Have you given pickleball a try?
Yeah, I've been out there. I enjoy it. You know, it's a great game, and the learning curve, it's much more accessible, I will say, than tennis. You're not chasing balls around, you know, a much larger court. I would say it's more social, or it can be. And so I think that's one of, you know, a couple of the main reasons you're seeing a lot of people get into it. It's a great exercise. Sad to see, you know, a lot of tennis courts around town being converted into pickleball courts, but I get it.
Yeah.
And it's great, you know, activity, outdoor, social, I'm for it.
All right. So we got you into journalism, but as noble a calling as that is, it's a hard pursuit to make a living at anymore. I mean, especially with contraction everywhere. How did you morph into these post-journalism gigs that you've been doing?
So I had kind of this juncture in the road when I was a reporter at the Times. It was about 2016, I would say, where I was enjoying my job. I had been there for a few years. We had a new editor come in, Autumn Phillips, who's mm-hmm. now the mm-hmm. At the helm of the newspaper in Charleston, South Carolina.
That's right.
She was a wonderful mentor and boss, but really gave me an opportunity to say, hey, you know, what do you want to do at this newspaper? And so I had some really cool opportunities to dig into some niche reporting gigs. And through that made some great community connections, and relationships in the community, and, really loved telling the Quad Cities story. And I think at that point I was looking at other opportunities within journalism. I mm-hmm. applied to a grad school, City University of New York. They had a really exciting kind of social entrepreneurial journalism master's program. But it was between Autumn coming in and meeting my now wife, Maria, mm-hmm. about that time
yeah.
where I decided to stick around in the Quad Cities, and very happily. But a couple of years later, in 2018, I was looking for that next venture. And I think the goal for any journalist is to cause some tangible change or impact in your community.
Absolutely.
And looking at opportunity for community and economic development, led me to a path to the Quad Cities Chamber, seeing an opportunity to have more of an impact in the community that I call home. And so 2018, Quad Cities Chamber President and CEO Paul Rumler had recently taken over, and there was an opportunity to help manage the regional action plan at that time, Q2030. Mm-hmm. And so jump ship. After about 5 years as a full-time professional journalist into the community economic development world.
Wow. And that's really kind of where you find yourself now. And we got to tee this up. So everything is cyclical. And I've been around an adult long enough to see downtown Rock Island completely empty that we used to joke you could fire off a howitzer and not hit anyone, then become the place in the Quad Cities to be. I mean, bar none, that was the place to be for a certain period of time. And then we've seen that the constant evolution continues and other downtowns have maybe stolen a march on us, and downtown Rock Island isn't what it was back in the 90s, say. Enter Jack Cullen and the Rock Island Downtown Alliance. Tell us a little bit about how that came from concept to reality.
Yeah, so first, just to back it up a little bit, after graduating from Augie, mm-hmm. I eventually lived in downtown Rock Island. So I lived at the Locks development, really cool urban living connected to Metrolink's mass transit facility downtown. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I call Rock Island my hometown within the Quad Cities since my Augie roots. But downtown, even more specifically,
sure.
living there as a young professional. And so when an opportunity through the chamber arise to help kind of manage this revitalization effort in partnership with the city of Rock Island, I jumped on it. And so 3 years ago, spring of 2021, the city of Rock Island and the Quad Cities Chamber partnered up to explore some revitalization efforts, really stemming from the city's 2015 downtown revitalization plan, mm-hmm. Which is exciting of all the efforts that we have going on here because we're in implementation mode. Pieces from that plan, really provided by both the consultant, but all the community input, mm-hmm. were not to say that, you know, nothing between 2015 and 2021 was implemented from that plan, but we are really now putting the wheels in motion in terms of putting that public input and those plans that were on the shelf into action. And so the Rock Island Downtown Alliance really is an alliance between the public and the private sector. special service area for the downtown established as a primary funding mechanism. So property owners within our 65 block area, downtown special service area, pay an additional tax that funds a higher level of services and activities in the downtown. And those dollars are governed and guided by stakeholders within the downtown. So it's an additional tax, but the folks who are paying that have a lot of control in terms of how those dollars are being spent.
Sure.
And so that was really the foundation for the Rock Island Downtown Alliance and this new effort.
Well, and you know, there was a somewhat of a precedent for that. First, right after I graduated from college, I lived downtown as well, in a place that you won't find anymore. It was in those years called the Olmsted Apartments. And what we didn't realize is what looked like wonderfully stone-carved letters Olmsted were just creatively painted wood over the original sign, which said Sala. So these were the Sala apartments that are fairly well known. And I lived down there for a while. And of course, we had to deal with this period of time where just nothing was happening down there. And out of that grew Dan Carmody's vision of the district, the arts and entertainment district. And I do think there was something in the way of a voluntary assessment. Everybody chipped in and tried to find ways to create this critical mass that would be attractive to people coming downtown. Now, I imagine that a huge part of your work has got to be in terms of storytelling, but also finding people's places in that story, because you've got a lot of competing interests. Some folks might want to recreate the 1990s. That's not going to work. Others may have other visions. So it's I can only imagine what your average week is like, talking to people, hearing their narrative, mm-hmm. and trying to integrate it into a unified narrative.
For sure. And shout out to Mr. Carmody and all the folks who built up the Arts and Entertainment District of downtown Rock Island, I think, mm-hmm. was the full long title, shortened to the district, as we know. It was the place to be, as you said, which is why it's worth, you know, reinvesting in, mm-hmm. right? It has such great roots and bones, although that term may be overused. But I would say, despite maybe some people's perception of downtown Rock Island, it really is a microcosm of a much larger urban district or center. Mm-hmm. We have a lot going on. You have a large employer base. You have some major employers like Modern Women of America, Royal Neighbors, Illinois Casualty Company, the banks. You're seeing a new federal building that's being developed, the new YWCA facility. So you have the public sector in the city, the county, federal government located down there. You have some large employers. You have the restaurant and the retail scene that we're looking to grow and actively working on that. But there is a lot going on, again, despite maybe some perception. Perhaps not the listeners that are tuning in here today may know more of what's happening in downtown Rock Island. But part of our job is to connect the dots for folks, places like the Botanical Center, to Skeleton Key Art and Antiques, to the Quad City Arts Gallery, to a vegan cafe at Healthy Harvest. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of assets and amenities. Yeah, and so a big part of our job is connecting the dots for the community and reminding people of the great things that we do have, supporting those assets, and trying to grow it as a whole.
We're going to get into some of that connecting of dots and all that sort of thing. But one of the things we love here at WVIK is when others do the connecting for us. And that's why I love every Saturday morning at about this time, the chance to present Composer's Datebook. And here it is for Saturday.
This is the Composer's Datebook for March 23rd. I'm John Burge. On today's date in 2012... the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet, an ensemble committed to commissioning original works as well as performing new arrangements for four guitars, gave the premiere of a suite that took them far afield, to Guangxi Province in China, to be exact. The new work, titled Guangxi Impression, took place at Sundin Hall in St. Paul, but the sounds the four guitarists produced evoked not only a far-off Chinese landscape, but Chinese instruments as well. That shouldn't have been all that surprising, since The composer of this specially commissioned piece, Gao Hong, is herself a virtuoso performer on the pipa, that traditional pear-shaped plucked lute of China. Gao Hong has made the United States her home since 1994, and her Guanxi Impressions is in three movements, the third movement titled Celebrating the Harvest. Gao Hong says, "A bountiful harvest is cause for celebration in Guanxi, and I depict this with sounds of percussion bands and people yelling with excitement as they dance. Near the end of the piece, I ask the performers to shout Chinese words expressing happiness." Composer's Datebook is produced by APM, American Public Media, in collaboration with the American Composers Forum, reminding you that all music was once new.
Support for Composer's Datebook here on WVIK comes from the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, where access meets inspiration. The QCSO seeks to inspire, entertain, and engage the entire Quad Cities community through music, music education, and cultural leadership. You can learn more at qcso.org. And friends, I can't stress enough, you got to get over to qcso.org. The month of April is going to be just extraordinary for symphony fans. We're going to start with a Masterworks concert that includes not only Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, but a brand new commission from Jacob Banks, a Quad Cities composer. And we've been seeing some of his works on symphony programs now for a while, but what's exciting is this latest work was co-commissioned by the Philadelphia Orchestra. So here's a local guy whose music is being heard all over on some of the greatest stages in the world. And, well, we knew him first. So you'll want to check that out. And then at the end of the month, Emmanuel Axe, one of the great treasures of classical music, one of the leading pianists in the world, is going to be here in our community. You don't want to miss it. QCSO.org. My guest is Jack Cullen from the Rock Island Downtown Alliance. And we're not only talking about Rock Island here today. You do a lot to advance the community in a lot of other ways. In fact, just this week, you and I shared a ride down to Springfield to take the word to the streets down there in the state capitol building. You still do a lot of stuff like that with the chamber as well, I imagine.
Yeah, that was a great experience. Actually, my first time at the state capitol meeting with lawmakers. So really cool. You're a pro, by the way. You were fantastic. So a lot of great tips and tricks, but no, you know, it was a good opportunity for me specifically representing or advocating on behalf of our downtown business community, and mm-hmm. Chamber providing that opportunity was fantastic.
Well, and the reason I enjoy doing things like that, and I try to take students down there once in a while, is we have to do everything we can to erode cynicism, right? And there is a lot of it, of course, in politics. I think maybe more at the national level than at the state level. At the state level, these are people that often as not you're going to see around your community, your state representative, your state senator, at events around the region, and they feel a little more approachable. But doing events like that is, I think, an exercise in hope. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk with you about, Jack, in today's program. And that is the power of hope. I mean, I'm not so naive as to think that, you know, hope is just a salve that will cover everything. But it informs things like, I mean, I think of all the people who simply would not occur to them to go to a place like Springfield and advocate on behalf of very esoteric things like tax credits and things like that, that can help communities improve themselves, because they'll think, what's the point? So I'm enthused by my acquaintance with you that you're a person who uses hope as a sort of an orientation device, almost like a Google Maps, not to get you to the end destination, but to show you the route along the way. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's really well said. And it's fuel for the fire.
Fuel.
And, you know, as we were 2020, and this is hyper-focused on downtown Rock Island, but, you know, as we were exploring revitalization efforts and meeting with longtime property owners and business owners that had seen kind of different iterations of maybe revitalization efforts over the years, you had to instill that hope in people, to get people on board, to go along with this new effort. You know, downtown Rock Island is worth saving. It was the place to go. We need that hope to really inspire the work that needs to be done to bring it back to that place to be. And so, yeah, hope was a big part, still is a big part of our work downtown. I think it's an important piece. It's not the strategic piece or you're getting right into the tactical, but it's the inspiration. It's the fuel to keep you going.
And I would take it beyond that small lens. And I think that's informative, but I think you got to really pull back and look more broadly. I mean, there are whole segments of commercial media in this country that are dedicated to the proposition that all is chaos and despair, mm-hmm. and there is no hope. And you might as well just circle the wagons and try to, you know, do your best to defend those like you for as long as you can. And that runs in the face of I don't know what has always been our secret as a society, as Americans, even as, may I say, gritty old Rock Islanders, is that, you know, if we work for it, there are better things that will accrue. And I think about some things that people a lot smarter than me have talked about. I love what Howard Zinn, the historian, had to say about hope and history, and whether you want to look at history positively or negatively. He said, what we choose to emphasize in this history of ours will determine our lives. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. And again, I can't help but think, when I look at what is passing for, I put news in quotes, and some services, and I'm not talking one side of the spectrum or the other, so don't think I'm talking code here. It's across the spectrum, that if you're only on a commercial basis trying to sell the worst of news, then you're giving people the idea that there's no point. You're destroying, as Zinn would say, their capacity to do something. So what do you do in your own life to make sure that you get up and you think, you know, there's something I can do this day in light of these negative messages?
I mean, I think it is back to that hope, right? And the opposite of hope, one of the opposites would be fear. Mm-hmm. And so how do you harness that? And I think that goes back to the hope. Looking myself in the mirror each morning, saying that today is going to be a good day. All right, you can't control everything, but there are controllables in your life that you can control.
Yeah.
And so I try to focus on the controllables each day. That gets into more strategy, right? And so, but it starts with that, looking yourself in the mirror. And that kind of dates back to my tennis days, the mental toughness side of things.
Yeah.
And a piece that I learned from one of my coaches is controlling the controllables. And, you know, that's what you can do. There's always going to be curveballs and things that come your way. But, you know, if you can control what's in your realm, and that's tied to hope.
Yeah. Well, you and Maria, your spouse, are engaged in one of the most beautiful expressions of hope, and that is child rearing. You have a lovely daughter, Anna Catherine. Right. And talk about things being outside of your control. I'm sure you're learning those on a daily basis.
Yes. Yes. It's a give and take.
Yeah. But I mean, that whole notion of, you know, I think having a child, raising a child and doing so in a healthy and engaged manner is a wonderful attestation to hope. I mean, you have to think that things are going to be better for her. And then for her children, and for those children's children, and otherwise, why would you even engage in the exercise?
I mean, we're blessed, very fortunate. Our little one's 2.5,
and two and a half now? My goodness,
blown by the saying of the years are long, but the days are short. Sometimes feels true, but no, I mean that's. And we're actually expecting another little one here this spring. And so, you know, that's hope too. Hope for our family's health and safety. And so, you know, there are controllables and uncontrollables with child rearing too. And that's, I think, you know, a little bit of a new lens for sure with that. And I think something my dad had shared with me once is part of parenting is learning how to let go. I mean, really from day one.
Yeah. Well, and that brings me to another thought on hope. I would go even further, and I don't know him personally, but your dad's got some great wisdom that I've seen reflected through you. But that whole notion that the idea that You put the foot in front of the other. You keep moving forward. Things are going to be what they'll be. Václav Havel, of all people, who was a great writer and thinker and then became a great political leader in the newly freed Czech Republic, was very clear that hope is not the same as optimism. And you have to dispel that notion right away, because he says it's not only the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense. And if parents can, you know, pass that along to their kids, like your dad did to you, like you and Maria will do for Anna Catherine and Anna Catherine's sibling, because I understand you don't want to know, right? You're going to be surprised, right? We'll be surprised. Yeah. All right. But Havel said that hope is a state of mind and it is not a state of the world, which I think is very, very fascinating. We have to make that choice that whatever we do, are we going to get up in the morning and say, yeah, well, I may not have it, but I'm going to do my best with what I've got. Yeah.
Yeah. And the choice, I like the difference between optimism too. That's right. Interesting. Need to explore that more, but I feel like optimism is a component of it.
Well, I see this as a choice being made in something that another thing that you and I are both following very closely. That's the West End revitalization effort in Rock Island. Yesterday had a big sharing of what's been going on. And even there, some of the great minds, leaders who are part of that initiative are right up front and said, look, there are a lot of these plans that have been sitting on the shelf for a long time. And it takes something like hope to say, we're going to do it. We're going to take those. We'll take the best parts of them. We'll add to what the community is saying today and move forward. Was that part of your effort with the Alliance? And because I'm sure you've got, if you have 40 business owners, you've got 45 visions for how things should be done.
Oh, for sure. And you know, we have, when it comes to downtown Rock Island, 65 block area, much larger than what some folks may think of just the core of downtown Rock Island. But, you know, there's more than 230 property owners in that area, spanning close to 450 different parcels. And so a lot of different perspectives, but very similar to the West End revitalization effort, which is exciting that, you know, our revitalization are happening simultaneously. And I think there is a lot of opportunity for collaboration there. But they do very much, I think, mirror one another, both geographically, but in the way that they're being pursued, and that it is stakeholder led. And if the folks from the community, you know, who are invested in that neighborhood, aren't part of it, aren't steering it, it really wouldn't be authentic. And I don't think there would be much traction. And so that was really the tipping point for us in downtown Rock Island, is getting the folks who are invested downtown, whether they live downtown, they work downtown, they do business there. They really needed to step up to make this the reality, and they did, and we're moving forward.
Right. You were mentioning some favorites downtown. We can't forget one of the great anchors downtown, Circa 21. It's a great place to go with the family. And I'm going to call it, the Quad City's favorite restaurant, Quad City Coffee and Pancake House, right there on the corner, Jose and Sarah. There's no place like it in town, and that's why it draws people from all over the region, both sides of the river, rural, urban. Everybody wants to get there on a Saturday or Sunday morning.
So. It's a hit, and for everybody, all walks of life,
everyone,
all socioeconomic statuses, and right across from Circa 21, which makes that a nice retail corridor. But yeah, I try to go there at least once a week for lunch. Shout out to Jose, chicken Caesar salad wrap, fresh tomatoes, hard to beat. I know people love the pancakes, but he's got a lot of range in the kitchen.
He's a classically trained chef. I mean, there's nothing he can't do. And of course, we're blathering on about our friend Jose, but there's no way he's listening to us right now, because every plate that comes out of that kitchen this morning and every day,
he's touching it.
He's making sure everything is just perfect moving forward. Oh, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But there again, I would say, I want to keep hammering you on this notion of hope. You know, there are things that we require hope in order to get over a lot of our biases. And anymore, the smart money is on, you know, a national chain, something that you can get anywhere in the country. And why don't you just drop another one of those on an outlying thoroughfare in your community? the fact that you, as part of this initiative, are refocusing on the heart of the community right downtown, but also doing it with the things that are unique or distinctive to our region. I find that terribly exciting.
Yeah, I think especially in a post-pandemic world, you have to have differentiators to be competitive, to draw people out of their homes. And downtowns, you know, have that competitive advantage of being that place where you can go, park, and walk to many different places. So we want to be that welcoming destination for all people, no matter what you're looking for, that we want to have something for you. And I would argue that we currently do have that. And we have reasons for people to come downtown, and we'll be working on having more of that. But it's, you know, it's niches,
yeah,
right? Pancake House. You're going down there right now, 10:40 on a Saturday morning, guaranteed you're waiting in line for at least 45 minutes.
And it's worth every minute.
I think that's fair to say.
It's worth every minute.
And so for us, it's where are you going? Where are you walking if it's a nice day while you're waiting in line?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I got to tell you about the exciting project that we're about to break ground on next month. And the vision that I lay out to people is that after, you know, this close to $7 to $8 million reconstruction project of the downtown, which includes the Pancake House block and includes some new exciting elements like outdoor dining structures and new public art and Arts Alley and new landscaping and lighting, a lot of exciting pieces of it. But the vision is you're waiting in line for the Pancake House Saturday morning. You walk through an adjacent alley to an outdoor farmer's market. There's an opportunity maybe to have a drink or a coffee, sit in a nice outdoor patio, play in a mixed use green space that's right in the core of downtown. Very welcoming and relaxing setting. And then you go and have your brunch at Pancake House, and perhaps then you hit a couple of shops afterward. But that's really the vision that we're trying to work toward.
What's the timeline for that coming into focus?
So good timing, actually. Monday night, in partnership with Public Works, we'll be presenting to the Rock Island City Council, which includes your lovely wife, Alderwoman Jenny Swanson, the recommended plans, final plans for that project. And exciting. So we're hoping to sign some contracts with construction to start in April. The goal is that it could be done over one full construction season. But Old Downtown, it's the largest investment in downtown public infrastructure in a generation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're excited about that. Could take longer, but we're in the process of identifying that phasing. And but it's happening, which is exciting because it's been talked about for a long time. Again, like that 2015 downtown plan, we're in implementation mode.
Now, were you aware when you were signing up for all this, all these projects that are coming downtown? You mentioned the YWCA. Now, that's going to be a game changer for a lot of things because it's going to bring the Y does nothing but high quality childcare right in the heart of downtown, plus a wonderful natatorium, the federal courthouse. Were you aware that all this investment was in the pipeline when you signed up for it?
Yes, knew that those plans and projects were on the horizon for sure, which is, you know, great to see that private investment being injected into the downtown. And we knew we had some dollars from the downtown tax increment financing district or downtown TIF district. We had some money to work with, and we did our best to try and leverage those funds to get to where we are now with the $7 to $8 million. Rebuild downtown project. And so I think it was a lot of those different pieces. It was the federal building, the new Y, some other projects, our ability to fundraise to get some of these funds to make some tangible physical improvements to the urban landscape. That really helps set the stage for this more sustainable funding piece that we have that are really driving just our daily efforts to improve downtown. And so it was a perfect storm of these different components happening. And the timing worked out.
Fantastic. Well, my guest this week is Jack Cullen. He's with the Rock Island Downtown Alliance. So we're having a few thoughts about hope, but I can't think of many thoughts that are more inspiring about hope than those that come from the chairman of the board.
So look around. Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky hopes.
So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
When troubles call and your back's to the wall, there's a lot to be learned. Then one could fall.
Once there was a silly old ram, thought he'd punch a hole in a dam. No one could make that ram scram. He kept butting that dam, 'cause he had high hopes.
He had high hopes.
He had high apple pie in the sky hopes. So anytime you're feeling bad, instead of feeling sad, just remember that ram. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam. There goes another problem, kerplop.
Oops, there goes another problem, kerplop.
Oops, there goes another problem, kerplop.
Eminent philosopher Dr. Francis Sinatra of Hoboken, New Jersey. They're giving us the inside deal on how hope can work. And in a pragmatic sense, my guest here, Jack Cullen from the Rock Island Downtown Alliance, it really is the difference between you might look at a set of deficits. We've been talking about a lot of assets this morning, but if you're looking at it through the lens of that negative lens, what was it that Zinn called it? You know, if we only decide to see the worst, then deficits are nothing but a book of lamentations. But to someone who's wanting to apply this notion of hope and positivity, well, it's a to-do list. That's what deficits are. It's a to-do list. So I'm going to ask you, Jack, when it comes to moving the Quad Cities forward, what are some of the things that are on our to-do list that we need to focus some time and attention and creativity on?
That's a great question. You know, I think it is, a lot of it can be focused on the talent that we have here, that talent development and retention. And so, you know, that's kind of part of my story that I like to tell, right? I was an Augie student, not from here originally, but something about it struck me. And I credit it to that internship that I had in college that introduced me to other parts of the Quad Cities, made me think about, you know, living here at some point. And so that talent retention piece, I think, is a big to do. In addition, it's just, you know, continuing to work on, you know, developing the amenities and the assets that we have here, whether it be, you know, the museum, the arts and culture part of the Quad Cities, the outdoor recreational activities, you know, leveraging those, doing our part to tell the stories of the places and things to do that we have here. But I think it's, you know, there are so many great things about the Quad Cities that already exist that we continue to brag about, and there are a lot of people doing a good job of that in our region. But I think, you know, continuing to double down on that while investing, you know, in our young people and our talent and our places. is really important.
One thing that's always struck me is, first, I love it is the part of my job that gets to welcome visitors to this community and take them around and give them a little bit of an introduction. And invariably, they'll say, well, I had no idea. This is phenomenal. My favorite story is a colleague from Scripps College out in L.A. who we hosted here for a conference. And when she was done, as I was taking her to the airport, she just stopped me and she said, I have to apologize to you. I always thought this was flyover country. And it had nothing to offer me. And she says, now I know. But one of our big challenges always has been, so I love it when I get to interact with these visitors, is folks here often don't get a chance to see what the special sauce is that we have in the Quad Cities. And there may be many reasons for that, but even when we do a little statistical analysis at Visit Quad Cities, where we look at things called net promoter scores, getting our fellow citizens more in the mode of sharing the good news, sharing the story. So I'm going to ask you to give me, Jack, a little bit of homework, and anybody else who's listening, what are things that I can do as a Quad citizen that are going to help people learn more about that secret sauce?
You know, I think it's something that you can put into your daily efforts, right? It might come across as annoying, or like you're pestering colleagues or friends or even strangers for that matter. But being that ambassador,
yeah,
you know, and trying to, in conversation with someone, trying to figure out what their interests are and then connect it to a Quad Cities, destination of some kind. I think that's a great way to do it. And trying to bring more people here. I can't tell you, friends, family from other places, whether it be Madison, I have a stepsister who lives in Spain. Mm. Her Spanish husband loves the Quad Cities. Ah. He loves the aesthetic of the bridge. He's an artist, but he loves the bridges. He likes the neighborhoods. There's something about it that excites him. And I think a lot of other people for that matter. But I think it's just tying it to, you know, what people's interests are and getting them out of the house. Again, going back to the post-pandemic world, it's giving reasons for people to get out of their homes and explore the community.
Sure. Well, speaking of which, nothing will give you a new perspective on your hometown like having a child. Mm-hmm. How has your child helped shape for you and Maria a different view of the Quad Cities? What treasures are you learning through the eyes of your daughter?
Oof, a lot. Yeah. Rock Island Public Library is one.
Great, you know, library.
We live in the Hilltop area, and one of the awesome new developments in town is the Watts Midtown
Library, right?
Embedded in a neighborhood. What a cool project! The YMCA and library coming together. That's a great example of one. We actually met a babysitter through that who helps manage the daycare there. Playgrounds galore.
Yeah.
Shout out to all the Parks and Rec facilities really across the Quad Cities. I mean, it's kind of been a fun part of parenting is exploring playgrounds in different nooks and crannies of the Quad Cities. One's close to home, one's farther away. And I was inspired yesterday, again, visiting the Arsenal and seeing the playground there. And now that we have a visitor pass, we can go and play there. And so, yeah, we're definitely on the hunt for more playgrounds. That's a fun part of it. But, you know, there are so many great public facilities to explore. A newer one that's on the private side is Elevate Trampoline Park in Milan. That has been a fun outing more recently to get out and kind of test the athleticism and work on running and jumping with Anna Catherine in a safe space. So that's been a fun discovery of late.
Now I understand that she has helped you and Maria to rediscover a favorite classic movie. Is that true?
Yes. Her favorite is Sound of Music. And it's something about Fräulein Maria.
I love it.
She loves it. It is, you know, singing the songs it's not even about watching the movie anymore. Now it's just, it's the soundtrack, and singing those songs are part of our daily, nightly routine.
But the given the age of that film, I find that to be extraordinary. That's wonderful. I mean, my own daughter, who's an adult now, for her it was Mulan, which was kind of cliched at the time, right? Every little person was watching Mulan on repeat back in those VHS days. But I think that's got great panache for little Anna Catherine that she likes. Julie Andrews and, the Baron von Trapp, or Captain von Trapp, I can't even keep him straight anymore. That's outstanding.
Yeah. I mean, when we watch, we should go there is something that she has said. And so aww. Salzburg now in Austria is on our bucket list for travel someday.
And soon there's going to be two.
There will be.
Buckle up. It's something when there's as many kids as you have hands. And then when I see it go beyond that, I have to tell you that phenomenon you described of watching the Sound of Music, now that I have grandkids, see, my favorites, I want them to watch whether they really want to or not. I figured I had my own time with my child that I had to watch what she and my son wanted to watch. Now I can say, no, we're going to watch Luca again just because it's that good. All right.
Well, test out Sound of Music. You know, it could be something about the songs there and the children singing that sparked her passion for it.
I owe it to that movie for getting a part in a musical at Rock Island High School. I could not read music, still can't, could not do it. And they were doing auditions for our senior musical. And so they said, you got to try this. I don't know what to sing, but I loved Edelweiss. So that one song I was able to sing, and I'll be doggone, our beloved theater teacher, Mrs. Gendy, took a chance and cast me in that musical. And fortunately, I only had about three notes to sing once I was on stage, which was a blessing. But yeah, I owe it to, what was the name of that actor who played the Captain von Trapp? Richard something, I want to say. But anyway, I owe it to him that I got that part.
Fun fact, I don't think that was actually him singing.
No, of course not.
Yes.
Of course not. Of course not.
But that's a goal. That song is a goal for me. So someday.
Do you play an instrument?
I do not.
I thought you did.
I do
all
not.
Right. Because the other thing that I got to do is pick up a guitar and start, you know, walking around the house playing that.
So that would be, that's my goal right there. So I need to get some lessons, some voice lessons. And fortunately, Maria is great actually on stringed instruments, guitar, ukulele, and great singing voice. So I've got my coach
at
home.
Well, let's look forward now because spring is coming. I believe spring will really come despite all of the terrible bouncing around in weather that we've had. But what are some things you're looking forward to other than the arrival of a second child?
Yes, getting out on the trails. One of my favorite things to do in the Quad Cities is to bike. And now that's with a Burley attached for the little one, but
sure.
Love the recreational trails in the Quad Cities. So I'm eager to get back out there on the bicycle.
Do you have a favorite? We always look for recommendations. Or do you have a favorite trail that you like to ride?
I can't tell you how many times I've done the Illinois to Iowa side, Mississippi River Trail connection, and then the loop through Bettendorf, Davenport, Duck Creek Trail, the oldest recreational trail in the Quad Cities, connects to West Davenport, back into downtown. The straight 60-mile route from Rock Island to Savannah, if you're really feeling it on a day that you have some tailwinds behind you, is great. And then, yeah, you know, the new 74 Bridge Trail. If you haven't done that, walking, biking, that's something you got to check out.
Well, today may not be the very best of days for doing that because we're going to have gusts up to 20 miles per hour into the evening hours. But we know that's something we can look forward to and enjoy with great gusto. I want to thank you, Jack Cullen, for being my guest this week and talking some great ideas that I think all of us can apply, whether it has to do with hope or where to get lunch today on this beautiful, blustery Saturday. So, Jack, thank you for your time, and thanks for being with us today. I really appreciate it. That's going to have to do it for now, though. Once again, thanks to Jack Cullen and the Rock Island Downtown Alliance. Invite you all, friends, to join us next week when our guest will be the Honorable Mark Smith, retired Scott County judge. And you're going to hear that while listening to Quad Cities NPR, WVIK 90.3 FM and HD in Rock Island, and at 95.9 FM K240DZ in Dubuque. Another look at that forecast we mentioned. Clouds are going to increase today. The high is going to get up just a little north of 40. Then tonight, there is a chance of snow. mostly before 3 a.m. Sunday, as we get into the middle part of the day, there's a chance of some rain sneaking in, but it's pretty slight. Sunday night, rain is likely overnight with mostly cloudy skies otherwise. Monday, as we start the week, rain, but with it a high of 63 degrees. And then we'll follow the week through, the temperature bouncing around like crazy until we land Friday with a 30% chance of rain, partly sunny skies and a high near 65, otherwise breezy. Well, that's spring in the Quad Cities, friends. Let's just enjoy it and soak it all up. Once again, thanks to my wonderful guest, Jack Cullen, and invite you to join us next time. But next up on WVIK will be Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. That's ahead on WVIK Rock Island. We'll hear the start of that and then a little bit of news from NPR in Washington on your public radio station, WVIK Rock Island.